أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وعلى آله وصحبه وسلم. ونعوذ بالله من شرور أنفسنا وسيئات أعمالنا، إن كل محدثة بدعة وكل بدعة ضلالة وكل ضلالة في النار. أما بعد، السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. InshaAllah, today is the first class in a series of classes on the book Bulugh al-Maram min Adillat al-Ahkam, and we'll be beginning with the chapter Fiqh of Tahara. And this book was compiled by a great scholar by the name of Al-Hafidh Ibn Hajar al-Asqalani. May Allah have mercy upon him. Ibn Hajar al-Asqalani was born in Egypt in the year 773 after Hijrah. And he began learning knowledge at a young age. He began studying the Qur'an at the age of 5, until he became a hafidh of the Qur'an at the age of 9. And he was known for his strong memory and his precise memory. At the age of 12, he moved to Mecca, where he began leading the Tarawih prayer in Mecca, and as well as learning hadith. And he acquired hadith from the scholars of Mecca, and later on moved on to other cities such as Damascus and Jerusalem and Yemen and Medina, where he went to learn knowledge and to acquire a hadith. At the age of 25, Shaykh Ibn Hajar married, and he was married to the daughter of a judge at that time, a notable Shafi'i scholar whose name was Qareenuddin Ibn Abdul Karim. And he married her daughter, her name was Uns Ibn Abdul Karim. And Ibn Hajar, he taught his wife hadith, and he educated her in the sciences of hadith, until she herself, Uns, became a scholar of a hadith. And Imam As-Sakhawi, he mentions that in some gatherings, Ibn Hajar would be busy narrating or writing, and so he would have his wife narrate a hadith to Ibn Hajar's students. Because she became a scholar in hadith, of course Ibn Hajar was there, and she would narrate hadith to Ibn Hajar's students, including Imam As-Sakhawi. Ibn Hajar is considered the Shaykh of Islam, the Shaykh of Islam in hadith, meaning he's the head scholar of the sciences of hadith. And he has many famous works in the sciences of hadith and their explanation, the most famous of which is the book Fathul Bari, Sharh Sahih al-Bukhari, which is a large work where he explains all of the ahadith mentioned or narrated by Imam al-Bukhari, including their sanad, as well as the fiqh rulings that are derived from those ahadith. Also, Shaykh Ibn Hajar al-Asqalani, he has a book called Tahdhib al-Tahdhib, which is a summation or a concise compilement of biographies of prophetic narrators. The narrators in the chains of ahadith, Ibn Hajar, he gathered all of their names in a book called Tahdhib al-Tahdhib, and he gave rulings on their name, on the, those people, whether they were accurate narrators, were they upright and righteous. And so this is one of the most common references for those in the scholar in the science of hadith. They often refer to this book. So that's another one of his famous works. And another one, the third most famous of his works, is the book Bulugh al-Maram min Adillat al-Ahkam, the book that we're looking at today, inshallah. In this book, we'll talk about more, but he compiled the ahadith upon which the rulings of Sharia, the ahkam of Sharia, are built upon. They're the most concise and important ahadith for Sharia. Ibn Hajar al-Asqalani was known for his piety, and one time one of his students rejoiced when one of the critics of Ibn Hajar was arrested. One of Ibn Hajar's students was happy and enjoyed by this, because the person who used to criticize Ibn Hajar was taken to jail. But Ibn Hajar, may Allah have mercy on him, he became very upset. And he said, only an evil person would be happy at the bad state or the bad thing that happened to another. So he was very pious, he would not like harm to come even to those who oppose him. So after this introduction about the life of Ibn Hajar, we'll begin with the author's introduction to the book. Shaykh Ibn Hajar, may Allah have mercy on him, he says, in the name of Allah, the merciful, the compassionate, all praise be to Allah for his blessings, apparent and hidden. old and new, and may peace and blessings be upon His Messenger Muhammad and his family and companions, those who gave victory to his religion and those who followed in their footsteps and inherited their knowledge, for the scholars are the inheritors of the prophets. Then he says that this is a very concise collection of ahadith, and I went and I made great effort to summarize and get the most precise ahadith so that the one who finds this book and memorizes it will excel over his peers. And the beginning student will rely upon this book. And even an expert cannot be independent of it. Even the experts must take benefit from this book. The scholars, they say that this collection of ahadith in Bulugh al-Maram, Min Adillat al-Ahkam, there are no fabricated ahadith in this book. And in fact, none of the narrators are accused of lying. But the weakest hadith, the general ruling on the hadith, the weakest amongst them are what is called Hasan li ghayri. Hasan li ghayri, he means that the chain has some weakness in it, but because there's multiple narrations, it strengthens it and lifts it up to a level of accessibility, a level of acceptability. Well, this is called Hasan li ghayri. Hasan means good and acceptable. Hasan li ghayri means there's more multiple chains that cause the hadith to become acceptable. And also Shaykh Ibn Hajar, he has narrated, or he has compiled the lists of references for each hadith. It was narrated by Imam Shafi, or Imam Bukhari, Imam Abu Dawood. He went to great effort to look at all of the books of hadith and to summarize those who made takhrij of the hadith, those who expounded the hadith. Shaykh Ibn Hajar, he called the book Bulugh al-Maram. Bulugh in Arabic, it means to make reach. And a person who is baligh, in Arabic, it means somebody who's eloquent, meaning he can make the words that he has in his mind reach the hearts of other people. This is baligh. So Ibn Hajar, he called this book Bulugh al-Maram, reaching the maram, the objective. And the objective that people have, there are many objectives. There's worldly knowledge, there's many types of things that people strive for the dunya, for the akhirah. But what type of objective did Ibn Hajar have in mind? He said, "Min adillatil ahkam," from the proofs of the religious rulings, from the adilla, the proofs, the ahadith for the religious rulings. So, thus, the Ibn Hajar, his intention with this book is that to make us reach to the rulings that were taught by the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. And so, the book is not concerned with the seerah of the Prophet. It's not considered with the hellfire and resurrection and matters, those types of matters, although we might come across some of them in the hadith, but its most important concern is to reach us to the rulings, the religious rulings in the religion. And may Allah accept from this work and guide us to the straight path and make us of those who follow it and act according to what we learn, inshaAllah. The first hadith in the chapter of At-Tahara, this hadith was narrated by Abu Hurairah, may Allah be pleased with him. وعن أبي هريرة رضي الله عنه قال قال رسول الله صلى الله عليه وسلم في البحر هو طهور ماؤه والحل ميتته أخرجه الأربعة وابن أبي شيبة واللفظ له وصححه ابن خزيمة والترمذي ورواه مالك والشافعي وأحمد. This hadith was narrated on the authority of Abu Hurairah, may Allah be pleased with him, who said that the Prophet ﷺ said regarding the ocean, regarding the sea, its water is purifying and its dead animals are lawful to eat. And this hadith, Imam Ibn Hajar, he says it was narrated by Al-Arba'a. Al-Arba'a, what he means here is the four books of Sunan. Abu Dawood, wa Nasa'i, wa Tirmidhi, and Ibn Majah. These are the arba. But then he also says it was also narrated by Ibn Khuzaymah and Tirmidhi and Imam Malik and Imam Shafi. These, he brings all of these other narrations to strengthen the hadith. He's bringing the names of other ulama so that they could strengthen it. Imam Shafi, he had a book of hadith. Just like Abu Hanifa, they had a musnad, but it was a small compilation of a hadith. So this hadith, according to Imam Shafi, is a foundational hadith in the area of Tahara. And we'll see why in a moment. The Prophet ﷺ in this hadith, he is speaking about the water of the ocean. And there's a story behind the hadith. In fact, there was a sahabi, his name was Abdullah ibn al-Mudliji. He was a sailor, and he used to sail the ocean, and he came to the Prophet ﷺ, and he said, "We sail the ocean, and we carry a small amount of water with us. If we make wudu from it, we become thirsty, we'll become thirsty, and we will not have enough to drink." So he asked the Prophet ﷺ, "Should we make wudu from this water?" That was the question behind this ahadith. Should we make wudu from the water on the ship? If we make wudu from it, then we'll become thirsty. So the Prophet ﷺ, he responded with this ahadith. He said, "Al-bahru huwa al-tuhuru ma'uhu wa al-hillu maytatuhu." Its water is purifying, and its dead are permissible for you. And Ibn Abdul Barr, he says, commenting on this hadith, there's a number of benefits that we derive from this hadith. The first is that because the Sahabi, he said, "We sail on the ocean," and the Prophet ﷺ, he approved of this. As you know, the Prophet ﷺ, لا يجوز في حقه تأخير البيان على وقت الحاجة. He cannot delay the explanation of a ruling when it's necessary to explain it. So here's a Sahabi that came to the Prophet ﷺ, and he's saying that he travels on the ocean. So this shows that it's permissible to travel on the ocean. And this is contradictory to what Abdullah ibn Umar, his opinion. He said that it was forbidden to travel on the ocean because he said it's akin to suicide. Because you can ride on the ocean, you could fall and drown in the ocean. However, this danger of riding on the ocean can be avoided by sailing in the safe conditions. And so what Abdullah ibn Umar said, his ruling is not considered strong amongst the ulama. We see that oftentimes even where they have forecasts where ocean ships, they only set out when the forecast is safe. And this is what we're required to do. This is what even insurance companies, they don't allow the ships to go out if the weather is dangerous, if there's the waves, they measure them in meters. And they don't allow them to go out when there's large waves. The ruling in Islam is that it's permissible to go on the ocean as long as it's not dangerous. If the weather is dangerous, if there's a storm, then Abdullah ibn Umar, his opinion is correct, that going on the ocean is like committing suicide to a person. However, if a person goes out in the ocean and then a sudden storm comes by and they drown, are they blameworthy for that? The scholars, they say no, because they took the precautions. And then this is the qada and qadr of Allah, that Allah caused this storm to happen and they ended up drowning. So the important thing is that sailing is permissible as in the Sharia, because the Prophet ﷺ did not condemn it, and that if something happens after taking the precautions, then this is the qadr of Allah. Also, we see from this hadith, what is mentioned by Shaykh ibn Abdul Barr, is that they say we carry a small amount of water, can we make wudu from the water of the ocean? And the Prophet ﷺ said, the water is purifying. The scholars, they say that making wudu, if a person only has a limited amount of water, even if he's traveling on land and he has just enough water to drink and to feed his animals and to cook, then he should make tayammum. Because drinking water is not replaceable, but wudu can be replaced by tayammum. So generally speaking, the wudu, it can be replaced by tayammum. But the Prophet ﷺ, he wanted to make clear an important point here. And that is that, and he said it in a very eloquent way. He could have said to the Sahabi, yes. The Sahabi said, can I make wudu from the water of the ocean? He could have said, yes. But actually, the Prophet ﷺ's words are so eloquent. The first thing that he said is that, ma'uhu at-tuhur. Al-bahru ma'uhu tuhur. He wanted to explain that the general ruling on ocean water is that it's pure. If he just said na'am, yes, then some people might have thought he was giving an exception for those sailors. In a time when water is scarce, then they're allowed to use the ocean water as an exceptional case. But he wanted to explain the ruling so that all people who hear this hadith, they would know the general ruling on the water of the ocean, that it's permissible to use it. If he just said na'am, then some people might have thought it's only allowed in extreme circumstances. It's only allowed when there's a necessity. Also, the Prophet ﷺ added an extra line or an extra piece of information. He said, "Wa huwa hillun maytatu," and that is dead or permissible for you. That you can use it
It's dead animals. Again, this is from his eloquence, because the Prophet ﷺ knew that if the Sahabi had doubt about the water of the ocean, they would also have doubt about its animals. If they thought that the water of the ocean was not pure, then maybe they would have had doubt about eating the animals in the ocean. Are we allowed to eat the fish in the ocean? If they thought the water was not pure, then they would not have eaten the animals. So you see the eloquence of the words of the Prophet ﷺ. He first makes it clear that the water is always pure. Whether you're sailing and you run out of water, whether you're on a beach, whether you're traveling or you're fishing, in all of these cases, the water is purifying. Also, the Prophet ﷺ, he wanted to make clear that we're allowed to eat the dead of the ocean. And in this case, in this particular situation, the question is, what is allowed from the dead of the ocean? The majority of the ulama, they say anything in the ocean is halal. Anything that is found in the ocean is halal. Whether it's a fish or shrimp or octopus, any animal that's found in the ocean is halal. However, the Hanafi school, they make an exception. They say that the only thing that's allowed from the ocean are the animals that are like fish, that are shaped like fish. If it's like a shrimp or if it's like an octopus or other animals, they don't allow that. And also the Hanafi school, they say that an animal that dies in the water and rises up after dying in the water because it died and it floated to the top of the water, it's not allowed. Again, there's differences of opinion within the Hanafi school on this issue. But generally speaking, they say that a fish that dies in the water and then rises up to the top of the water, this fish is makruh to eat. And the reason they say this is not to go against the hadith of the Prophet ﷺ. It's not to contradict the words of the Prophet that its dead is halal. But they also have other adillah. One of the adillah is that a fish that dies in water, it becomes afan, it becomes spoiled. And that's why it floats, because the bacteria affect it, and then it rises to the top of the water. So this fish, it's harmful to the health. So they looked at other ahadith that would indicate that eating something harmful is forbidden. So they didn't go against the hadith of the Prophet ﷺ, but they qualified it with other ahadith. Also, the majority of the ulama, they say that anything that comes from the ocean is permissible. And this is also the opinion of some of the Hanafiya. Because we have in the book Fath al-Qadir, they say that the person in Ihram, he's only allowed to eat fish of the ocean and not the other animals. So that some of the Ahnaf, they said that eating only fish was for the Muhrim, not for everybody. So even within the Hanafi school, you have more than one opinion regarding other sea creatures. Also, the Jumhur of the ulama, the majority of the scholars, they use as a proof that we can eat anything in the ocean the hadith of Abdullah ibn al-Jarrah, who said that when he was traveling on an expedition, they came across a huge whale that had come up on the side of the ocean. And you might be familiar with the hadith, they were starving and they were in desperate need of food. So they took this whale and they ate from its meat for over a month. They ate from it and they enjoyed it. And what happened is that actually its rib was so large, and this is mentioned in Bukhari, that a man could ride under it with a camel without touching the top of its rib. So this was a large whale. It wasn't a normal fish, and they ate from it. And so when the Prophet ﷺ, Abu Ubaidah ibn al-Jarrah, he came to Medina, he mentioned to this to the Prophet ﷺ, and they were worried, did we do something wrong? And the Prophet ﷺ said, this is risk that Allah has sent to you. This was risk that Allah had sent to you for you to eat. So the Jumhur, they use this as a proof that all of the fish in the ocean are allowed, anything in the ocean is allowed, even if it's a whale or something smaller. The Hanafiya, they said, wait a minute, those people were starving, so it was a darura. They needed to eat the fish, so that's why they were allowed to eat it, they needed to eat the whale. Well, what's the response to that? The Jumhur, they say, if we look at the narration when Abu Ubaidah ibn al-Jarrah, came to the Prophet ﷺ, the Prophet said, where is the fish? Is there any left? Let me eat from it. So the Prophet ﷺ ate from that fish to make clear that it wasn't because they were in a darura, but it's generally permissible. He ate it, and in Medina, of course, he was not starving. He didn't need to eat the fish. So the Prophet ﷺ, he ate from that fish to show that it's allowed to eat from those animals. Also, the scholars, they say, what about animals like a dolphin or a sea lion and these types of animals? They make exceptions. Imam Malik, he said that the dolphin is haram. Because in Arabic, the dolphin is called khinzir al-bahr. And he said, khinzir is haram, so if it's a khinzir al-ard or khinzir al-bahr, it's still haram. So Imam Malik, he said, do not, he forbade the dolphin. Also the kelb al-bahr, which is a shark. The Imam Malik, he said, the shark is haram, kelb al-bahr. Some other ulama, they forbade the crocodile. And the crocodile and the frog, there's a specific ruling on the frog. There was, in the time of the Prophet ﷺ, there was a doctor who came to the Prophet ﷺ and he said, I want to use the frog as medicine, to make some type of medicine. And the Prophet ﷺ, he forbade that. So the ulama, they say that the frog is forbidden altogether. And also some ulama, they made an exception for crabs and other animals because they thought that there was some potential harm that might come from those animals. So the Prophet ﷺ, he wanted to mention to the Sahaba that not only is the ocean water pure, but all of its animals are also pure. Because he wanted to remove that ambiguity. The Sahaba, they asked questions because they had an ambiguity, and the Prophet ﷺ, he was always clear in his answers. So he wanted to remove all the ambiguity. He didn't just say, Na'am, you can eat the fish, or you can use the water, I'm sorry. He said, the water is pure, so that anybody, whoever comes later on, will always know that you can make wudu any time from the ocean water, not only in cases of necessity. And also he wanted to clarify that the animals of the ocean are permissible, with the exception of those animals that we mentioned. There's a statement by Abu Bakr, may Allah be pleased with him. He said that the animals in the ocean, that Allah has slaughtered them for us. Meaning that there's no slaughtering of the fish in the ocean. It doesn't need to be slaughtered. We have one last question, which is about animals that live on the ocean and on land. They live on land and also in the ocean. Are these animals allowed to eat, or are they forbidden to eat? There's three main schools of thought. Some of the ulama, they say that these amphibious animals, they are like ocean animals, and they're all permissible. Some other ulama, they said amphibious animals are like land animals, and they're all haram. And there's a third school that says the ruling depends on where they're found. If they're found in the ocean, if they're dead in the ocean, then they're ocean animals. And if they're found on land, and they die on the land, then they're land animals. Also, one of the things that Shaykh Muhammad Atiyah Salam, he mentions about the wisdom, the hikmah, behind the permissibility of the dead of the ocean, because they're dead, they're maita, but they're allowed, and that the dead of the land animals are forbidden. He said that if you look at the blood of land animals, they contain carbon dioxide, and they're harmful to the body if the blood is eaten. The blood of a land animal, when it dries, it becomes black, and this is poisonous, actually, the carbon dioxide contained in their blood. But if you take a fish, their blood is actually white. When their blood dries out, it's white, and it contains oxygen. Because the fish, they take oxygen out of the water. So the blood of the fish is not harmful to a person. Its blood is actually safe for the person to eat. And also keep in mind that the Ahnaf, they forbade the spoiled fish not because of the fish itself being haram, but because of the harm that comes from it. That eating a fish will lead to harm to a person. So this brings us to the end of the first hadith, inshaAllah, in the book Fiqh of Tahara, in the chapter of the Tahara, in the book Qulub al-Maram, in Adillat al-Ahkam. جزاكم الله خيرا وصلى الله على محمد وعلى آله وصحبه وسلم والحمد لله رب العالمين. Is there any questions? Does Fela have a question? No? And sisters, if you have any questions, you're welcome to ask, inshallah. Yes, brother, come on.
Now, you said that on the land, according to the water, is the same. Did you percent by the most time you spend?
Right, there's three opinions. Some of them say they're all, if they spend any time in the water, they're considered water animals. The question was, does it matter the percentage of time that they spend in the water and the percentage of time that they spend on the land? The ulama, they didn't consider that. They considered what's important is where are they found or where are they captured from. Are they captured in the water or are they captured on the land? That was the third school. Some of them, they said, if they spend any time in the water, then they're considered ocean animals. Some other ulama, they said, if they spend any time outside of the water, then they're land animals, we cannot eat them. So those are the three main schools on that, inshallah. Is there any other questions? Yes, brothers, come.
The iguana.
Iguana? Iguana is allowed to eat. It's actually not part of this chapter. But, the lizards in general, as you know, the hadith of the Prophet ﷺ, he was eating at a dinner table, and they brought some roasted lizards for them to eat. And the Prophet ﷺ, he took his hand away, and he said, "We don't eat these in my land, you know, where I come from Mecca." But then Khalid ibn al-Walid, he said, "Is it haram, Ya Rasulullah?" He said, "No, it's just not my habit." So Khalid ibn al-Walid took it and he ate it. So it's clear that it's allowed, but it wasn't from the habit of the Prophet ﷺ. JazakAllahu khair. Is there any other questions?
How about the char, which eats the people, as we know?
No.
And also, there's a hadith which the Prophet ﷺ said about the naf, which has whoever it has hatar or naf, makhlab or naf, that's considered.
No. The shark, the Imam Malik, he considered it haram, because it's called the dog of the ocean, kalb al-bahar. He considered it haram. But the nab, that has the teeth, as far as I know, this refers to the land animals. Because most fish, they eat other fish. So if you said that any fish that has the teeth to eat other fish are haram, then that would be the majority of fish. Because the big fish eats the little fish, right? So the fish, when it eats another fish, that fish is not meta, because it's tahur, it's pure. But an animal, when it eats another animal, that animal is najis. Because a dead animal, like a lion, when it eats a dead zebra or something like that, that animal is najis, it hasn't been slaughtered. So the animal, the lion, is eating najasa. But when it comes to the fish, when you eat other fish, all the fish are pure. So even if it has teeth and it eats other fish, it doesn't become najis. If it eats people, that's a different situation. <yeah. laughs> May Allah save us from that, inshallah. Okay, yes, from the mother.
For instance, the same case, the non-adult, even the goat has teeth, but the purpose of those teeth is different from a lion having teeth.
No.
So they have more canines, they have more incisors, teeth. So is there any distinction in terms of the fish? Because if fish shark has canines or sharp tooth, because they're used for piercing, a whale doesn't have sharp teeth.
No.
There's a distinction.
The Prophet ﷺ, forbade the dhinab, the fangs, the animals that have fangs, because goats don't have fangs. You know, cows, they don't have fangs. Only the animals that prey on other predatory animals, they have the fangs and the claws. And even the birds, the same ruling applies to the birds. If they have the claws, that means they eat, you know, other birds, dead animals, they're not allowed to eat. But when it comes to the animals in the ocean, this is an exception to the case. In fact, the whole category of animal oceans is an exception. Because the Quran says, حُرِّمَتْ عَلَيْكُمُ الْمَيْتَةِ. Dead animals are forbidden for you. So the whole category of ocean animals or animals that live in the ocean is an exception to a general principle. So we can't apply the rules that apply to land animals to the ocean. So it's an exceptional case then. The Prophet ﷺ clarified that all of the ocean animals are allowed. Yes, brother.
Poisonous fish.
I'm sorry?
Poisonous fish.
Right, the poison, anything that's harmful is haram. The Prophet ﷺ said, لَا ضَرَرَ وَلَا دِرَارَ. Anything that you eat that harms you, he said, there's no harming. And so anything that we eat that's harmful, or that it's either makruh or haram, depending on the level of harm, etc. So if a fish is poisonous, then of course it will be haram, it will be forbidden. InshaAllah, JazakAllahu khair. Any other questions? Any other questions from the sisters? Okay, inshallah. Sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, alhamdulillah rabbil alameen, jazakumullahu khair.